Which we have no idea if that's true or not.
We don't, but I actually do and think that they are. So
that's been wrong there, folks.
I just want us to be very clear that we're now in the bullshitting section of the podcast.
This is bullshitting with numbers.
Though. I have, which is called statistics.
Yes.
I have been...
Hey, welcome to Infill, where after long delay, we discuss local San Francisco politics and policy with YIMBYs and guests. Laura Clark, YIMBY Action.
I'm Sam Moss with Mission Housing.
And we have two people to help us crunch the data and understand elections. Scott Lucas, introduce yourself.
Newly senior editor at San Francisco Magazine, previously everything else at San Francisco Magazine.
And I'm Andy Mullen. I'm the data writer for the Bay City Beacon.
Thank you, gentlemen. So first, we're going to start with, I mean, I'm sure that most people have been watching. We were going to hold off on doing a podcast until we actually knew who the mayor was going to be. But instead,
we have to talk about things.
And we're never going to know.
We can't wait till November 2019. So.
When Mark Farrell will be the incumbent running again. So we're going to try and hash over what do we think is happening and why. Does time and or numbers have any meaning, or are they merely abstracts of our unconscious minds? Please, Andy, why don't you start us off with, like, what are the basics? Where are we? Where have we been?
So after today.
So then just real quick, this is for the San Francisco mayor race.
Which is the only race in question.
Yeah. Just for our listener out there. You know, just want to make sure you know we're not talking just about some proposition. Right?
So after today, which is Sunday, June 10th, 2018, year of our Lord, we have 226,000 ballots counted in the mayor's race. At this point, after all the ranked choice voting has been done, London Breed is winning by 1,500 votes. And she has about 105,000 to Mark Leno's 103.5.
So it's close.
It's very close. Among first choice votes, she has about 37%. Mark Leno comes in behind her at like 25, and Jay Leno is nipping at his heels.
Okay, so just for our listeners, San Francisco has what's called ranked choice voting. And what the fuck is that?
It's sometimes called instant runoff voting, which is not at all the correct nomenclature in this particular situation because there's nothing instant about it, but there is ranking. Voters are asked to pick 1, 2, and 3 among the candidates, tally up all the first place votes. If anyone receives a simple majority, 50% plus one, it's over, they're the mayor. If not, the lowest place finisher is eliminated, and whoever their first place voters voted for, the second place votes become the votes they look at. We redistribute across, and we run it again. Mm-hmm. If at any point somebody hits 50 plus 1, it's over. If not, it keeps going. Second place votes, if those are eliminated, become third place votes. Okay. If third place votes become eliminated, your ballot's done. It's what's called exhausted.
And the purpose of this is that you can feel good as a voter about voting for some rando that you love, but you don't think is going to win, because you can put a mainstream candidate as your number 2 or number 3 choice.
Got it.
And then if everybody does that, it gives these more marginal candidates, people who don't have the money, you know, like the conventional strengths, but appeal through charisma.
And I think there are a lot of people in San Francisco who think ranked choice voting helps get more people out in general, you know, just to vote. Certainly we can do a data dump on that some other time, but I think anecdotally, you know, just like grand scheme of things, I feel like it's something I hear a lot.
Another important thing to think about is another thing that it makes people irritated about, but is actually kind of a feature, not a bug, is that people are trying to appeal to a broader base because they want other people's number twos. Mm-hmm. And so it might, you know, a lot of people have been saying, oh, the candidates didn't really pull away from each other very much. There wasn't a lot distinguishing one candidate for another. Other people might say that maybe that was a feature, that other people were trying to appeal to others' number twos.
I will say, so one of the interesting things about me is I am frequently frequently wrong about everything. One of the things I was wrong about in print in a story a couple of months ago during the election was where I was writing about Mark Leno and sort of rapping his knuckles pretty sharply saying this is not somebody who's running a policy-driven race. This is not somebody who's distinguishing himself as a candidate. I looked at that as a bug. Turns out, thanks to instant runoff voting, this is more of a feature than I had anticipated.
I will say I still think you were right about that. In print.
I mean, you were right that it happened.
Yes.
Right? Whether it was a valid strategy for winning. Right. No, I think you're completely right about, like, running on not being very clear on what the policy implications of his candidacy were. That is a thing that occurred.
I mean, yeah, the candidates did, a lot of them, you know, maybe they didn't separate themselves and they were close, but I mean, if you're a housing nerd especially, like a lot of the YIMBYs are, I do think that there was, you know, kind of a separation of the candidates. But just in general, I mean, how are the districts, like, citywide for London?
So London Breed won, is coming in first place in every district except for District 8, which is the Castro, Noe Valley, and Glick Park, and District 9, which is the Mission, Bernal Height, and part of the Portola. Jane Kim won District 9, and Mark Leno is winning District 9, and expected to continue to win, and Mark Leno is winning District 8.
Okay.
But she won by about 10%, if not more. London Breed won by 10%. If not more, in every other district.
She's currently winning.
So
we are still counting.
Yeah, so she has a more of a, like, citywide support. Can you deduce that from those votes? Or?
So far, yes. There's turnout is not so high as to conclude that, you know, the voting base being different than sort of the people at large. What is interesting about this election is that conventionalism tends to say there's a more conservative west side of San Francisco and a more progressive east side. This election looks like a donut. We have sort of London Breed vote in a ring around a progressive core for Leno.
I feel like I hate your definition because that implies that Mark Leno ran a progressive campaign.
Fair point.
I was just going to say that that ring includes, like, lots and lots of renter neighborhoods and lots and lots of super affluent homeowner.
Yeah, it feels like more than anything, the whole progressive moderate thing is getting blown up.
Yeah, you know? Leno ran on being an old gay man.
Right,
which is pretty good in San Francisco.
Which gets you a lot. Gets you
really doesn't look a day over 40, I will say that.
Definitely, I mean, this was the, like, why do people vote, right? You know, like, we have this idea that there's ideology, and they think that, like, this race really kind of shows that ideology really came second to a lot of, like, cultural appeals. And it was really interesting on housing because, you know, the candidates didn't really say, you know, when I was talking to, like, an average voter who had sort of vaguely been following the race, they were like, well, how do you know that London's the pro-housing candidate? And my explanation had to be all these things that were actually difficult to explain. Like, oh, well, she supported this really important bill, SB 827, their eyes glaze over, and they immediately don't care. And so, like, a lot, both Jane and London, and to some degree Mark, knew how to rile up their base with very specific micro-targeting around housing and how to sort of, like, not make those things as broadly known as I think would have, like, drawn a more divisive race, maybe.
And with the ranked choice, the Leno voters also got to vote for Jane and then say that they supported affordable housing, right? Because her whole shtick was that she's built more affordable housing than any other supervisor.
I guess.
I just have one last point about the donut, which is there were two districts that voted for which the combined Kim Leno vote was less than the Breed vote. So, like, where
Breed
won an actual majority of the vote. And that was District 2, which is Pacific Heights and the Sea Cliff and the Marina, and District 10, which is Bayview and part of the Portola.
So
and, I mean, like,
polar
two,
opposite,
as opposite
end of the city.
A neighborhood you could get.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Highest income and lowest income.
What we've seen historically in San Francisco is a little bit of that. This is what you might call the Willie Brown coalition. So you have African Americans who tend to support moderate candidates in a certain segment of white San Francisco, especially richer whites. Those two groups racially tend to be the core of the moderate vote. So that's striking in its geography, but it is. This is not the first cycle that we've seen that.
Yeah, whereas the big unknown in most elections, who do people play to and try and whip up and try to gather, is often West Side homeowners.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you know, who and how were they catering to those people was really interesting to watch through this race.
I mean, especially with the 827 rally that Jane Kim held on the West Side, you know, like that seemed like a pretty clear telegraphing of who she was catering to, but I don't know that those votes came in for her, did they?
So at this point, they really did not.
Really?
She came in by far and away third place in District 7, which includes West Portal and a lot of those really fancy homeowner neighborhoods. London Breed won those with almost 40% of the first choice votes there, despite not really campaigning or like courting them all that hard.
She definitely had a West Side game, but not in the richer homeowner-y places. She it felt like London focused on the renter parts of the West Side.
Her campaign headquarters was in that part that straddles her district in the Inner Sunset and District 4, so District 4, District 5 area. Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
So we've done a little bit of the district way of looking at it. So we were sort of thinking we would cut this into different ways of looking at this. So one is district by district, what's happening physically in each of the areas of the city. And the other way is, because we're counting so slowly, is like as if it's a horse race point in time, which
really,
is
really more of a tortoise race at this point as they inch their way to the finish line.
So every day at 4 o'clock we get new numbers and everyone just like stands around me like, oh my god.
Refresh.
Yes.
I register just one objection to the metaphor of the race in this context, and I've seen it not so much with what you said, but out there a lot, and it's helpful to think about here, which is that it's not as if this is the Warriors game, and there are different quarters, and events are unfolding, and we see new events every day. Everything's already happened, right? It's all done. Every shot has been taken, every basket has either been made or not made, and we're just spooling out the tape a little bit.
Not in chronological order.
And if I may, thank you for being I'm usually the only one that makes the sports ball reference on the podcast. And may I thank you, sir?
Basket what? Basket.
I'm really into this one. Somebody asked, are you following the game? And I was like, you mean the race? Yes.
Getting
the Warriors won.
Getting back to Scott being wrong about everything all the time, I had a party on Friday night, which I told people to come at 8 o'clock. And I couldn't figure out why nobody was there.
We literally had the conversation. I was like, why does he want people to come over during the Warriors game?
I literally did not realize that was the Warriors. And I live in Oakland.
If I had been invited, I would have been there early.
Oh man. Well, it does make following this race every 4 o'clock really fun and exciting, even if it's makes everyone think that they can be the Rain Man looking at the numbers and reading a new thing. So as our resident Rain
Man. But really,
Man,
we can't. I was right about a lot this election, and I just want everyone to know that.
That's why you're here.
Shots fired.
That's why you're an expert.
All right. So day one, we counted mostly vote by mail early.
Yes. So day one, which is whatever, June 6th, Tuesday, we counted all the vote by mail early. So they were the first things to hit. Shortly thereafter, we got the election day. The people that showed up went into a booth, pulled the curtain behind them, like did it in paper and handed it to probably a very old lady.
Arguably, that's the first people to vote, and then day two is the last people to vote. And that's like a very like, but we're treating them like it happened in order.
Yes, but it didn't. And then subsequent to that, every day post that, we've gotten people who voted by mail but waited till the very last minute to do so. So either people who like postmarked their ballot by Tuesday and was received by Friday, or people who like took their ballot in hand that was supposed to be mailed and handed it to the old lady.
Like I do that. That's how I do it.
And that's what I did as well. Mm-hmm.
And so that's considered a last minute vote?
Well, they're the last count.
Last counted.
They're the ones we're still counting, and the ones that will be, there's about 10,000 of those left to be counted probably tomorrow.
Yeah, mine,
so
mine
you think
hasn't
they'll
been
be
voted.
Done counting tomorrow?
I think they'll be done counting vote by mails.
And as we record this on Sunday, June 10th, we're talking about them potentially being done counting on Monday, June.
No.
No.
So there's also the provisionals.
That's the next part.
Oh, you guys. And your alsos.
It's a surprise twist.
God,
did you know you were in an M. Night Shyamalan movie? You've been dead this whole time.
Your ballot has
Mark
been
Leno has been mayor for a decade.
Spoilers.
So we should actually recap how many votes there are.
Yeah, please.
That's correct. So as of today, we have counted 226,000 votes. We think there are 10,000 vote-by-mail ballots left and 14,000 provisional ballots left.
Okay. So what percentage of outstanding votes are we talking about?
About 5%.
About 5%.
Probably a little more than that.
Okay, and now, so we're obsessing about the last 5% because we're talking about a difference right now of 1,500
votes. So that I mean, it's a small percentage, 5%, but because it's so close, like there's
That's
still
correct.
A lot of room to move, right?
And so what becomes interesting here is the question of whether or not, if you think of the votes that have been counted as a sample, and all the votes in the universe as the population, it becomes a statistical question of, is this sample a accurate reflection of the population of votes? And this is where you've seen the two campaigns, well, I guess the three or four campaigns, wrangle a little bit to try to jockey for position in the news about whether or not they think, at least in public, that the votes that have been counted are reflective of the total universe of votes that remain to be counted.
And my take on that is, at least day by day, they've not been very
reflective.
I think what we've seen so far is reflective. Like, if you take the sum total, because
uh-huh.
we're 95% of the way done,
right?
But, like, each day has been weirdly slant. Like, they took sections, geographic mm-hmm. sections of the city each day and did those ones.
And that was not on purpose.
No, I think it's just.
It was because different sections of the city
voted.
Arrived at
different
times.
Altogether at different times.
Correct.
And probably in the same baskets.
And do we know what percentage do we think of the overall population do we think will vote this time?
50. Oh, just over 50%.
So it ended up being a high percentage, right?
That's pretty good.
Voters.
Yes. Registered voters.
I feel like, weren't we talking, though, that it was going to be historically really low and all
Only
that?
Only fools who were not me said that. Because I said, I'm in fact in a bet.
Subscribe to the Bay City Beacon, everybody.
Subscribe. You can get the hottest, freshest, most correct takes. I'm in a bet that voter turnout was going to be over 50%.
One thing we have seen...
And I'm winning that bet.
One thing we have seen historically since the introduction of ranked choice voting is initially there was a lot of concern, and the data bore it out, that voters would be confused by the process and that it might lower turnout. As time has gone on, Rich De Leon has some good studies about this. He's an emeritus professor of political science here who studies kind of San Francisco voter behavior. Has done some good work that's shown... over time, voters have grown more and more comfortable with the system, mm-hmm. and as a consequence, the change in systems doesn't seem to have affected depressed turnout at all.
And truthfully, the reason it's so high, in my opinion, is that we just voted in November of 2016. All those people are registered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All those vote-by-mail people stayed vote-by-mail people. The Department of Elections just mailed them a ballot. All they had to do was fill it out and mm-hmm. send it back. Mm-hmm.
I also think, I mean, this is the... Do we know why anything happens? But I do think that all of the...
I don't. I know it all. So you're like...
The sort of like constant drumbeat right now of Trump and everyone talking about midterms, mm-hmm. I think did drive a lot of marginal voters, people who don't focus on local issues, to be like, I have to vote in every single election.
And, you know, our boy Gavin was on the ballot for lieutenant governor right. this time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know to what extent that drove... Mm.
That's
voters.
Interesting because I don't feel like most of the people, I mean, I know most of my non-political friends, which is an ever-shrinking pool of people, but most of my non-political friends don't know Gavin at any higher rates than they know London Breed, you know? Like, I don't think that, when they're following politics, the politics that they're following is national.
Are you saying that they don't have, like, pictures of Gavin Newsom on the inside of their locker? Is that like...
I don't think they even have lockers.
It's interesting. Gavin's mayorship is now almost a decade behind us.
More than a decade.
And
it
wasn't,
right?
More than a decade.
Yeah, because I moved here a decade
from
ago.
The beginning of it or from the end of
it? Oh, from the end of it.
From the end of it. We're more than a decade from
and
this.
And wasn't that...
But he still looks so good.
He does. He does.
True.
Gavin, if you're out there, I'm happy to have a hair off with you any day, Chief. On a side note, isn't that also kind of the same thing about Leno, right? Like, I would argue that the District 8... perhaps is the only remaining district with a significant amount of people who even remember that Mark Leno was a supervisor, like, in our city.
Mark Leno was first elected to office locally when I was 9 years
appointed,
old.
Appointed, even.
Appointed.
Yeah,
appointed.
By Willie Brown's
initial
super
supporter.
Progressive. Yeah.
So he's had a long career, and, like, I wouldn't say that he's been in the news daily
I think that's another thing, just on the side note, with, like, how Scott Wiener has gone to the state and still managed to be locally relevant.
Just got there, though. I mean,
okay, cool. Yeah, that's,
and he gets
that's
national
true.
News media.
Yeah, that's, I guess what I'm saying is I don't know that... I wonder if it was like that when Leno went to the state, is what I'm saying. The same information kind of popped up in San Francisco like it does now.
As somebody who did some coverage of Leno when he was in Sacramento, and then... even before that, when I worked in Sacramento as a staffer, Leno always had a pretty good line of communication back to San Francisco. He was somebody who was to a large extent district-focused, somebody who got headlines, got press, and had a pretty good connection, I think, with policy here in the city. So I think there's, on that score, he did better than some electeds when you compare him to other sort of our assembly members or senators that he served with. Leno actually did pretty well.
But not in the past 5 years. I mean...
Well, he's been out a while.
Let's say since the rise of the YIMBY. If we're using that as should we say 4 years? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, 4 years. I mean, because
it sounds
when
cooler
came,
if you say 3 years, okay, more well, impressive, but I'm just saying.
But
it's
when
been
he
4 years.
Came, when he came to give his candidate questionnaire, right, he said it was the most striking of any of the things that were said. You know, most of the time a candidate comes and speaks to you and they try to avoid the questions, which is sort of typical. And somebody, as part of his spiel, he said, well, nobody's talking about putting apartments next to single-family homes. And we were like...
That was the reaction.
And you were like, subscribe to the pod.
Yeah, I was like, actually,
we're the club that
that's
is for that.
Yeah. And he said a very straight face.
Sure.
Because somebody said, well, what do you think about building dense housing on the west side? That was the question. And he answered it with, well... I mean, no one's talking about Bill. You know, he said
it revealed he might have early onset dementia.
Well, because the way it was phrased was because 827 was prevalent then, and they said, you know, what would you say to a constituent that lives 3 or 4 blocks off of Geary that says we just don't want any housing? And he says, I go out and I tell my constituents out there that, yeah, we should build on the corridor, but no one's talking about putting apartments next to a single-family home. And we were all like, like the music stopped and everything.
Well, fell out of their chairs. Yeah. Yeah. Women had to go to retirement fancy couches.
But the thing is, like, you know, how in touch with... That was the question of the election cycle with Mark, was how in touch with where people are, right? Both on all sides of the political spectrum, because, you know, the idea was that people are really angry and we're going to be drawn to Jane Kim, or people are very pro-housing and going to be drawn to London Breed and want that, like, uplifting but, like, genuine policy things that she was sort of standing for, and that there was this polarized electorate, and that he was kind of sort of doing this old school, I've been around for a while, nothing burger.
Slash change.
But maybe, like, that's how you mop up everybody's number two.
I'm literally twice the age of either of the other candidates, but I am the change candidate.
Well, so I have a question along those lines.
Just to jump in, part of an answer on that is Leno has consistently framed the housing issue as one sort of two things, one about affordable housing, subsidized affordable housing production, and the other about eviction protections. So one of his big pushes throughout his time in Sacramento was around the Ellis Act, Costa-Hawkins rent control, that kind of thing. And so that is a series of messages which sort of are baked in from probably the 90s, frankly. It's not one that takes into account the way that Kim does as a progressive or that Breed does as a moderate, sort of the rise of the YIMBY moment. Leno talks about housing from a paradigm that's 10, 15 years back.
And all of his staff are from 10, 15 years back.
Yeah, and so you might...
like Kim's approach better, you might like Breed's approach better, but both of those seem more updated than Leno's did. Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, real quick, I just wonder like what that did with the ranked choice thing of Leno's people maybe saying like, yeah, I'm going to put Leno, but I don't want Jane Kim, who keeps saying mm-hmm. she's built more affordable housing than anybody else.
But more, I think actually where it is reflected even more is actually in the point in time. So the early voters skew older, skew more mm-hmm. consistent voters, mm-hmm. skew like they've already made up their decision. You know, they vote all the time.
They're not on the Twitter.
They're not on the Twitters. And they're not doing like last minute, like, am I trying to figure out who to vote for? So like all of the like early vote by mail, it makes a lot of sense to me that Leno would pick up the maximal amount that Leno would maybe be capable of picking up by that vote by mail early. Election day, it makes sense for that to skew Jane Kim. And then the question is all this like mushy in the middle stuff that seems to be day upon day increasingly a little bit more for London, a little bit more for London, as the like people who voted by mail or then at the end dropped off their ballots, we get closer and closer to election day. And you have some really interesting Google search results.
So I was watching the Google Trends the whole time. I'm a fancy boy. What we saw in the week before the election was skyrocketing Google searches for London Breed and Jane Kim, and Mark Leno was like in the toilet from a Google. He was on par with Angela Alioto among searches in the last week. So I mean, that lets you know.
Yeah. Either people know him
and liked him and already voted for him or didn't vote for him.
Right.
People who were like actively trying to learn more about the candidates in the last week, which it turns out is a huge number of vote by mail voters, were only really looking at between two candidates, and that was London Breed and Jane Kim.
That's very
And that's why as you've seen, as the post election day vote by mail count has been entered in, you've seen Jane Kim doing super well. You've seen London Breed doing very, very well. You've seen Jane Kim doing pretty well, and Mark Leno coming in third.
Forgive me if this is stupid, but is there a percentage of people who put London and Jane both like as their 1-2? Like, is it a significant one, or did it even pop up?
You mean London first, Jane Kim second?
Yeah, right.
I don't know the answer to that question because...
Gotcha, finally.
Because they don't process that at the Department of Elections.
No, they do. This is the Barron open source data.
A human can do it.
Yes. Yeah.
But like, I don't have much of a life left. And I'm certainly not... like living in a world of hypotheticals that don't even exist, which is where London Breed comes in third and her votes go to Jane Kim.
Well, this is like, if you want to go completely insane, we will link in the show notes to all the different tools that have been created for hashing the data different ways and some maps and interesting things. Because I think like another thing is, as Jane Kim becomes, you know, is getting more and more votes as we get closer to election day, the thing that everyone says can't happen, won't happen, is will in the 1-2-3 Jane Kim overtake Mark Leno? And therefore it means that instead of Jane Kim's votes being redistributed among the two candidates, will it be Mark Leno's votes being redistributed? And Mark Leno voters are far less loyal to Jane Kim than Jane Kim voters are to Mark Leno. And so London wins easily if Jane comes in second.
Correct.
She wins by 10 points is what we look at.
And, so it's like and full stop.
Versus one full point.
Yeah. And this was also, in terms of my reporting prior to the election, the campaign's assumptions was pretty universally, if Kim were to come in second, it would be toast for Leno. Mm-hmm. That it would be unmistakably a Breed situation. I can't speak to that. I don't know. I doubt it. You run hard every time, and I see no evidence that Kim didn't. But I will say that pretty much everybody on the campaigns that I spoke to, all of them knew that unless it were Breed Leno or Leno Breed, Leno didn't have a chance.
The reason I think that is because we always knew Mark Leno was going to pull heavily from Scott Wiener voters. And Scott Wiener came out there and said, vote 1-2, or like in whatever order you feel strong about. These people he's pulling from are hardcore Scott Wiener fans. Like, voted.
Right, Wiener still polls like 75% in DA,
and he
killed
Jane Kim in that district when he was in the state senate.
Right.
Can I just, something you said a minute ago, Laura, about sort of the explosion of data
sources of data and tools to use the data that it just sparked a thought in me as a journalist who's data literate but not particularly data makeable. I don't make the data. I can read it, but I can't make it very well. I just want to say thank you to everybody. If you're listening to this and you've made something like that and you put it out there, it's invaluable for people like me to then be able to go pick it up and use it. It's really impressive.
Yeah, so we'll leave some shout-outs to some particular Yimbies.
Yeah, Byron, if you're out there, thank you, man.
Thank you.
You are a gift from the heavens, my friend.
David Barron's also fantastic.
You know, David Bloom, Roan out there. You know, everyone, if you're not a Yimby member, then it means you're not on the Yimby Slack, and you should have super FOMO because the Yimby election Slack is taking up all of my data.
He's on the fire.
Yeah. So join Yimby Action.
Yes, if you need new ways to obsess, here I can provide you with many. But especially because, you know, this is the circling back to what you were saying earlier about the day by day as the votes come in, is it representative? What is it representative of? And where are the remaining votes going to be coming from? Is this kind of like open question, which means endless hypothesizing? Mm-hmm. And then the last piece is the provisional ballots, which, let's say, what would make a ballot provisional? And then who do we think those people are?
Provisional ballots are people that were not registered and not able to register on election day for some hanky reason. And so they got to cast a provisional ballot, which assumes that they could have been registered or would have been registered. And then they verify that they are eligible voters. And then,
was this at City Hall that happened?
It could be at your polling place or at City Hall.
Okay, and
but these are not same-day registered voters because those people are already counted.
Okay, so what about, like, was there also a way where you went to a different polling station but they still let you vote? Like, did you? I think so. And that's provisional also, I think?
Okay. That actually, unless the law has changed recently, that happened to me once where I voted a different precinct.
And they just made you sign your name.
And I voted provisionally, and then at the end of everything, they check and they decide, is this something we count or is this something we toss out?
Well, so funnily enough, so I've been an election observer.
Nerd.
I know, right? So this is like the other thing that when the counting is intense like this and everyone's obsessive, is that people from the campaigns go down to observe the counting, which is like watching really interesting grass grow. You're like, oh wow, there's a lot of mechanics to this grass. But also the real thing that everybody's doing is watching each other, right? The watchers watch the watchers to see like what is everyone like, you know, if all the watchers suddenly go like over to one corner, then everyone's like, oh well, I guess that's the... So I walk anyway. It's ridiculous. And sort of trying to, you know, you try to kind of eyeball the other people to figure out what team they're on. So, like, do you, like, go up and say hello and be like, oh, we're on the same team, so I'll, like, tell you my data analysis? Mm-hmm. Or are you from the other team? Oh, it's ridiculous. But it's very fun.
In these election monitorings, have you seen Jimmy Carter show up at all?
No.
Can we get him in? Is it too late?
No, but there are a lot of...
That's a very deep cut. Like... 20% of the audience at best is going to get that joke. And if
Leno
you do, tweet at Yimby Action. Yes.
I don't know how many Mark Leno supporters listen to the Yimby Action Infill podcast, but if you're out there, thank you.
Okay, wait. So the whole point, though, is these provisional ballots and verifying. There's this whole crazy system. So the ballots are all in big stacks. They shake them to make sure. The shaking stage is really important so that the cards fall to the bottom of the envelopes. Then they have a cutting them open machine, which takes a picture of the outside of the ballot and compares that to the existing registration and compares it to the signature they have on file for you in the registration. So I had no idea because I thought signatures have no meaning and no one cares, right? But that actually this is the one case in your life where the signature actually matters.
Two cases. If you buy a house, which I just did a couple weeks ago, the notary will check your signature against what's on file. So they made me sign like my middle name, for instance, which I never do, but apparently they had it. And so I had to do Scott Allen Lucas.
Yeah, I get notarized a lot at Mission Housing, like for property transfer stuff, and they're hardcore about...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so lesson for this campaign is don't do a random squiggle
for your voter
registration and for signing your ballot is because...
So they're pretty generous.
Are they?
Not to be.
Well, I mean, mine
they tell us how generous they are. They're taught to the benefit of the doubt, if you will.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
But so anyway, so that you have all these people with, this is the most boring grass, but there's like this, there's this army of humans right now who are looking at the pictures of the outside envelope of the ballot packet with the signature and everything and then comparing it to people's registration and trying to make sure that there's a match. Mm-hmm. And so if you, for instance, one of the provisional ballot things is like if you happen to be in District 8, which was having a supervisor race, right, and you did a provisional ballot, you're like at a polling station, you're registered, but you weren't at the correct polling station, they would give you a ballot anyway, and then it would be a District 8 ballot. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, the fact that you may have voted for supervisor, they have to weed that vote out.
If in some instances people crossed the district
line,
it shouldn't have been in that.
Yes. Those are called partially counted provisional ballots. Do you want to talk about how many provisional ballots there are?
What we think about them.
So there are 14,000 provisional ballots.
Oh my God, that's well within the margin of error.
Big time within the margin of error. Historically, 80% of those votes are valid and counted.
I think we're still going to be at
11,000.
Okay. That's still a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a ton.
In terms of where the race is and how close it is.
It's definitely within. Right now, the largest portion of those votes come from District 8 at about 1,800. Hmm. Every other district has about 1,000 plus, except for District 11. Nobody in District 11 voted this year. So they didn't vote provisionally, they didn't vote by mail, they just took the year off. Yeah. They were just like, call us when you pick a winner.
Have we geographically figured out, if we said D11 yet? We've said some of the other districts where they are.
District 11, sorry, is Crocker, Amazon, Excelsior, and Balboa Park.
We'll put a link to the district map. So
plenty
can,
of
like,
people
yeah.
will not have been to that district.
No, and I mean, I can, on a side note, say it's like Mission Housing, we've been organizing in District 11 mm-hmm. a lot. We're building the 140 units over the upper yard. We're part of the Balboa Reservoir development, which is District 7, but on the border. And they are a very, shall we say, secluded, bubble-like district.
Car-centric.
They are extremely car-centric. There have been people who yelled at me for not only not providing one parking spot per unit, but not three parking spots per unit out there.
Are you going to drive to the grocery outlet,
Sam? My soul crushed within itself. But yeah, so I mean, but I guess now that you mention it, it's not like any campaigning really happened out there either, did it? I think I saw London with Supervisor Safai in District 11, like maybe the day of.
I didn't go to District 11, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah,
Even though it is BART accessible.
It's true.
It is.
It is
very. There should be much more density around those BART stations, but there isn't, and so everyone drives.
Well, there's about to be 140 units, mm-hmm. y'all.
Nice. A+. So on that, so we've got now the votes coming in. We think that the provisionals, what do we think about the provisionals?
First thing to think about is the next 10,000 vote-by-mail ballots, which we think will be, if they are anything like the vote-by-mail set out.
Which we have no idea if that's true or not.
We don't, but I actually do and think that they are.
Has it been wrong yet, folks?
I just want us to be very clear that we are now in the bullshitting section of the podcast.
This is bullshitting with numbers.
Which is called statistics.
Yes.
I have been comparing the turnout in each district to historic elections. And what we see mm-hmm. and what we saw today, I was wondering if I was going to say the cavalry came in for Lyndon Breed. Certain districts, D5, D2, D7 in particular, had been awfully low compared to their peers. Mm. And what numbers? And we were wondering if those voters would come in, and they came in big today, mm-hmm. and they should continue to come in tomorrow with the last 10,000, which is really the bitter end of the mm-hmm. vote by mail vote. So we expect those to be very favorable to Lyndon Breed, potentially net her up to 500, maybe more votes after ranked choice voting. So she would be up by over 2,000. At the end of tomorrow, before we begin counting provisional ballots.
So if I can just run the numbers then on that, just in my head, if she has, let's, for sake of the argument, say somewhere between 1,000 to 2,000 vote mm-hmm. lead at the end of that process, and then there are, we think, about 12,000 provisionals left, the break would have to be 7 to 5 7,000 Leno, 5,000 Breed to get back to a tie, basically.
Yes.
It's sort of what we're looking at. And that's a pretty high, I don't know, 7/12ths what that is as a percentage, but it's more than, it's 50 and
Leno would have
change.
To consistently do very
he, he
well.
And have would to he have to better, wouldn't yeah. he have to do with better than he has so far by a long margin?
To make that even harder, right?
Yes, in answer to your question.
He needs to get, he either needs to get 7,000 first choice votes,
right.
which we think he's not going to do. His voters tend to be older, tend to be more
well-registered. They've already voted, kind of.
District 8 already has historically high turnout. I don't believe that there are a ton of that many.
Are they tapped out?
Yeah,
right.
Like, there's only so many people there. Every Kim vote, it takes two Kim votes to equal one Leno vote, approximately. So then you have to double those mm-hmm. numbers mm-hmm. if they turn out to be Kim voters.
Right, that's right.
To get a one vote for Breed. That is an uphill climb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not impossible. Not at all. Her voters have been very loyal to him as a second choice and have certainly turned in ballots in that direction heretofore.
And what about, so are the vote-by-mails that were dropped off at polling stations, do we think that those are different than the ones that were put into the mail in any way?
I don't have any reason to believe that based on both where I think they're coming from and all the vote-by-mail to date.
Okay.
I would say, if anything, vote-by-mail voters who waited till the very end broke more heavily for London Breed than people who voted vote-by-mail earlier.
Okay. Can I offer just sort of one rule of thumb that I use, separate from the data analysis, which is always sort of the first thing you should do? The second thing you should do, I think, historically in San Francisco, we tend to over-assume that there's going to be a difference across
these tranches of voters, so provisionals, same day, vote by mail, absentee, that kind of thing. And historically, that dates from, I think it was the Gonzales mayoral race, when that actually...
That, was that Gonzales Newsom?
Yeah.
Right?
And so when that before, actually was the case.
Yeah, right. So and this was the first, sorry to cut you off, but that was also the first district.
Correct.
We had, San Francisco had just decided to go back to district elections. So this is the Chris Daley, Tom Amiano, Aaron Peskin.
And so I think what we have is a little bit of an anchoring bias in how we... As certainly I know as journalists talk about it, where we tend to over-assume that there are these broad differences across the voting populations because we're anchoring to this one particular election in which that really was true. That maybe is sort of the outlier
but we do,
compared to the rest of the mayoral elections afterwards.
We do have evidence that the provisional ballots are generally different than the rest, right? I thought.
We have... We don't know anything about these provisional ballots.
Right. That was going to be my next point.
We know about provisional ballots in the past, which have tend to skew harder than
yes.
than even the election day towards the quote-unquote progressive candidate.
Yes.
And this is where I think that we don't... This is this bundle. So we have conventional wisdom saying that these provisional ballots are going to go to Kim. Mm-hmm. And do we believe it or not, right? Because this is the question of, is London pulling a different demographic of people who may be more likely to also fall under the provisional category? People who, you know, these are more likely to be marginal voters. These are more likely to be people who are not previously registered or have moved a lot. You know, is London able to pull in a group of people who are provisional voters and who may be not, you know, I don't know. This is open.
I also think that, I mean, not to like toot our horns or anything, but I'm going to toot the horn. I mean, I think that just in general, you know, I mean, the whole progressive, moderate, right? Like the, just the whole, I believe that I'm reading a lot more on social media and even in like City Hall, like people talking about the lines being blurred of what the Leno, the old school San Francisco, like you say, right? Like Leno's camp definitely still thinks that there's a mod and a progressive and you're on one side or you're the other. Whereas like, you know, the Yimbys were super no on H and yes on F propositions this year, which were, I mean, you know, written or whatever you want to call them, super progressive measures, and yet we're also told that we're supply and demand demons that are reigning in hell on everyone.
I do think this is where racial politics actually, I think, plays an even bigger role, right? Because this is District 10, this is black potential mayoral candidate, this is, you know, our, and the historical ability of black politicians to pull in low-income, mm-hmm. moderate black voters. Mm-hmm. The capital M. I'm not saying that they're like, this is the thing. This is this cutting across the titles.
Yes.
And also, you know, we give these titles, the only people who pay attention to them are the people who watch SFGov TV. You know, we say this all the time, right?
I love SFGov TV.
I feel very seen right now.
Figure it out. It doesn't work on Chrome still.
Oh, no.
But, you know, this is the, you know, like, and the metaphors that everyone's pushing for, mm-hmm. like, national politics, you know, London Breed, this, like, mayor for all, pulling a very Obama mm-hmm. stuff, mm-hmm. you know, pulling in black marginal voters mm-hmm. who maybe hadn't come to the polls in a while, and also, you know, people who want that kind of inspirational message is cutting across.
So political scientists sometimes talk about realignment elections, which are elections in which whatever the existing party dynamics, where they were drawing their voters from, which groups, change. Mm-hmm. So when the Republican Party first came into existence in, say, like the 1856, 1860 elections, realignment election, new party showed up, new configurations of voters occurred. That was a national one. In San Francisco, we haven't had a realignment election since at least Willie Brown was in office, and probably a little bit before that, maybe it's down to the Agnos administrations, basically. We've sort of had a fixed set of sort of where people are drawing their votes from for 20, 25 years, something like that. And what I'm really interested in finding out, both in this election and then in the 2019 election, is when, if that shifts, when that will shift. Because I do think the reason you get realignment elections is that you get new issues and you get different configurations of voters thinking on those issues. Housing seems to be one of those. Homelessness, street cleanliness, public safety seem to be perhaps other ones, but housing probably the most prominent among them. I think eventually we hit a realignment election, and I think the realignment happens around housing issues. I'm not convinced this one was it yet. I haven't, both sort of just impressionistically, I haven't seen it. I haven't really seen the data yet. It's going to take a little bit of while for us to really figure that out. But I think we do hit something like that eventually.
I think if it's going to be, I think November actually mm-hmm. is when it'll be.
19?
I
mean,
November 19?
November 18.
Because it's District 6.
It's District
10 and District 2.
Exactly.
And there are potential pro-development but also progressive, like, mm-hmm. you know, anti, you know, like looking at police issues and things that aren't just specifically housing but also right. supporting building housing candidates.
But this is the rollout, right? So if London wins, so we should start talking about if-thens, but I do think either way, November will be, we've got known candidates who are very pro-housing.
Is there a race in District 6?
I know.
But I was actually going to say, if you want to talk about paradigm shifts, this is a great window into District 6. This election that we're in right now, Jane Kim has floundered.
How did she do in votes in her own district?
She is coming in third.
And that's kind of amazing.
It's
amazing.
That's kind
so
of
for
amazing.
Every, and what, like amazing, every three votes, she's
by amazing, we
one.
Mean awful.
Yeah.
For Jane.
For her. That's awful.
Yeah. This is a district that elected her twice.
Yes.
That chose, she got 25% of the vote there. Means every three out of every four of her voters went to somebody
this
else.
This is Al Gore losing Tennessee.
Well, and if I could just throw a little insight there, when she won the first time, Deb Saunders mm-hmm. was the actual progressive candidate, right?
Walker.
Deborah Walker was. Sorry about that.
I don't think Deb Saunders.
My
is
bad,
ever
Deb. My bad.
Anything except for criminal justice reform.
So like Deborah Walker. She was the progressive candidate, like Chris Daley and them, super, you know, pushing her. Mm-hmm. And I know Randy Shaw has told me that when he went hard for Kim, mm-hmm. he was like called by the progs and told what a traitor he was and all this stuff. Yeah. And so it's interesting that, you know, in that district, Sonia Trauss and Matt Haney are kind of, and Christine Johnson, like, I don't know, I guess those lines are kind of being drawn again, and it's interesting like how far Kim has come to like being the uber pack capital be progressive.
Had Kim done as well in her district as London Breed did in hers, or Mark Leno had done in his, she would be a number two.
Ooh, yeah,
wow, interesting. That's interesting.
And so, like, that is the, I mean, if you want to, there's a million reasons to lose, but that's, that is the...
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I mean, I think that it also, I mean, if we're talking about what ifs, then, I mean, what do you do if you already have, you know, Supervisor Kim's support or endorsement in your running?
I would run as far as I could in the opposite direction.
And some other people might take that albatross and try to put it around someone's neck.
And I were anyone, I would pull a Mariah Carey, and I don't know her. I've never met her. Who are you talking about? This is not...
I want to offer the minority opinion on that just a little bit, which is I think voters usually don't vote on endorsement. And so the question is more, right. is less
and
about...
Jason McDaniel is pissed at you right now.
I know, but I firmly believe the evidence suggests this. And so the question becomes less about the endorsement and more about how are you appealing to voters? Are you going after the same group in the same way or not?
Well, and I would say this probably doubly applies in District 6, where so many people are new voters, so many people recently moved to the district. It's had a lot of change. This will be, you know, for 2, 6, and 10, which are up. So District 6, where Sonia's running. And then District 10 has a lot of new residents.
And 10 is which?
Bayview, Hunters Point.
Dogpatch.
Potrero.
District 10 has a ton of new development. And in November, arguably, there's going to be a shit ton more people who just moved there and just got their address there. Like, I would put it past District 6 now in the new people moving in, if just without knowing
vote?
The data and everything. Mm-hmm. And I mean, yeah, I mean,
this
I don't...
is the will they vote? Will they vote for their supervisor? They will probably come out in November because there'll be so much hubbub around like November national. Mm-hmm. We'll just be talking about elections, mm-hmm. so I think they'll be more now, likely to vote.
I think the supervisor, you know, I think Ellington and Shimon. Out there, in the two main people running out there, I think, are getting
Tony
out.
Kelly is so mad.
My bad,
you
Tony.
Right now.
My bad, bro. My bad. You don't listen to this fucking podcast anyway. Yeah. But they are out there. You know, like, they're visible. Their vote, you know, like, they're really getting out there. And I think that in the past, District 10 actually has been kind of a, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I would have imagined that it's not been a high voter.
It's like, very, very low.
Yeah, like a distant, because like there's parts of Potrero that are more D8 than anything, but mm-hmm. that's a tiny little few blocks, and the rest of Potrero has literally been where we sent the disenfranchised people from the Fillmore, and like it's where we've sent the people who progressive white San Francisco has like tried to not let vote.
So on average, there were, even though the districts ostensibly have the same population and number of eligible voters, District 8 has twice as many voters as District 10.
Twice as many registered voters.
Twice as many actual
voters. Twice as many registered and then went to the polls.
Yeah, so okay. not the registration is actually much closer.
Right.
But the people who cast a ballot. Mm-hmm.
Who believe that their thing, their what they want has a meaning.
Right.
You know, if you figure that voting means that you think your opinion matters in some way. That's double in District 8?
Yeah.
God damn.
I mean, and we're taking the highest and the lowest, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone else, there are other District 3, District 1 also have quite low turnout. District 11 does. District 8 has astronomically high voter turnout, mm-hmm. And so that's anomalous in its own way. But, I mean...
I mean, it's also why the district has not built any housing.
And it's also why Mark Leno is doing super well, mm-hmm. despite the fact that he lost everywhere.
Well, so we're getting towards the end. Funny thing, so... I guess we should have last thoughts. My last thought is, in the small world of San Francisco politics, ran into Deborah Walker as another observer at the San Francisco elections. Yes, yeah, so she was with the crew of people eyeballing one another.
And she's on the DBI commission with me. She also has a badge.
So. Oh, well, all right. Any other last thoughts on the election?
I am really excited for it to be over.
Next month.
My last thought would be the one person we haven't talked about in this but is worth talking about in the context of the 2019 election is Mark Farrell.
Ugh.
Should London Breed not win, Farrell, based on his sort of six-month record in office, becomes a plausible candidate. Should Breed win, I think the lane is pretty much over. It's closed for him. But he's somebody to keep your eye on, mm-hmm. just as sort of a second order kind of thing mm-hmm. down the line.
And he did a lot to...
He was very mayoral in the last few months.
Would you say he was not a caretaker mayor?
I would say he was anything but a caretaker. We were, I mean, if anyone who got swept up by the homeless sweeps would say he's not just caretaking.
And this was the, you know, we had a block of people who call themselves progressives who put the most conservative supervisor in charge in order to justify the fact that they thought that it would help their candidates win for mayor. And who they said was going to be a caretaker and who was not was an activist mayor who proceeded to do all these homeless sweeps that were extremely destructive, in my opinion, moving people around and really damaging people's already struggling lives.
And shameless plug, if you want to know more about this, the next issue of San Francisco Magazine, I have a story about Farrell's 6 months in office.
The other Mark.
The other Mark. So make sure to pick that up on newsstands at your local Safeway supermarket.
Okay.
Or the internet.
Or the internet. Or subscribe.
SanFranMag.com.
Like I do.
Did you forget what podcast you're on now?
No.
It's a beautiful, glossy magazine. It looks very good on
it
your cover.
It is beautiful.
Thank you.
So I will tag team on the last final thought about Mark Farrell, which is if London Breed does win, and does win by a very narrow margin, I hope somebody sends Hillary Ronan a fruit basket saying thanks for the election. Because if there was one thing that skyrocketed London Breed to the top of everyone's mind and on the tip of their tongue, it was her absurd speech on the night that they removed her from office.
We can have a link to that probably too in the notes.
I don't know. Does the Bay City Beacon have it up
do you
somewhere?
Have a clip at all of that?
I'm sure we do.
It should be up on the Gov website.
Well, everyone knows that you can go to SFGov on demand. I'm just saying.
And I do daily.
And I do a lot. Yeah, no, don't get me wrong.
Some people Netflix and chill. I SFGov TV and chill.
Thanks for coming in, you two.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, this is really great.
Yes. Pleasure.
Any other questions? We'll include Twitter handles, so please at me, bro.
Peace.